Chapter 5. The Path to Liberation. By acknowledging the existence and source of suffering, we can cease to create further unhappiness by practicing moral self-discipline. This enables us to attain the meditative concentration that gives rise to intuitive wisdom. As with everything the Buddha taught, moral discipline, meditative concentration, and intuitive wisdom are not the result of his personal opinions or arbitrary judgments. They are derived from the standard of what is correct, honest, and beneficial. For example, to say that lying is wrong is not a personal opinion. It is morally wrong because it is deceitful. If we say something untrue, or we simply exaggerate something, the other person will react improperly because we had given him inaccurate information. Lying is morally wrong because what we said was not correct and we were not honest. Also, lying is not beneficial to either the speaker or the listener. The seeds for being hurt in the future have been reinforced in the speaker, and the seeds for sadness or bitterness or anger have been sown in the listener. These standards of whether something is correct, honest, and beneficial can enable us to develop discipline, meditative concentration, and wisdom. To begin our practice, we can start with some basic understanding. First, we can test to see if suffering exists, and if it is caused by craving and by expectations. When we experience events not going the way we anticipate, when good times do not last, when those we love are not always with us, and we feel that, yes, life is largely unsatisfactory, we are experiencing the reality of discontentment. But we cannot stop there. For many, it becomes logical for one to want to embark on the path to genuine happiness. The Four Noble Truths are in themselves statements of causality. We have craving and expectations, which we anticipate will make us happy. If we were to just land this new job, or if only this wonderful person were to fall in love with us, life would be perfect. But when these desires are not fulfilled, distress arises. When we remain stuck in an old job, or there is no one to meet us when we go home at night, we undergo disappointment and loneliness because our expectations remain unfulfilled. But what if we obtained what we wanted? Inevitably, things will become unsatisfactory when our other expectations, of which there are many, are not met. The new job requires us to work long hours, and there are constant deadlines we have no hope of making. The wonderful person falls in love with us. But after a while, we discover that he is not really that wonderful. Perhaps his habits are annoying, or he does not really listen to us. Thus, when our wishes and expectations are not met, unhappiness is created. And even when our hopes are fulfilled, the happiness will at some point begin to fade when our expectations change. Consequently, discontentment is created yet again. Inevitably, we end up unhappy and unsatisfied, if not from one thing, then from another. All because of expectations that arise when we have attachments and craving. To reduce our craving and eliminate our attachments, we can practice non-attachment. Think of it as letting go. It does not mean withdrawing from society to lead a reclusive life. And it most certainly does not mean neglecting our responsibilities. We still need to do the best we can in whatever we are doing. Whether we are trying to meet that deadline at work or washing the dishes at home. The true spirit of letting go is the detachment from desires and expectations. It is our greed that creates suffering. When greed is reduced, discontent will likewise lessen. If we keep telling ourselves that we want something because it will make us happy, we are reinforcing that desire and increasing our unrealistic expectations. Once we understand causality, we will realize that what we have now and will have in the future is what we have destined ourselves to receive from what we did in the past. This happens whether or not we desire it. But with no desire, we avoid potential disappointments. When we no longer have craving and expectations, we will not undergo disappointments due to our unfulfilled desires. Not being disappointed helps us to be happier. If something enjoyable happens, of course we appreciate it. For unexpected happiness is the best of all kinds of happiness. But more importantly, without expectation, there is no disappointment. How can we miss what we never thought of having in the first place? Initially, in our practice of non-attachment, we will focus on relieving our own dissatisfaction by training ourselves to let go of attachments and expectations. Gradually, we will develop the wish to help those around us to also end their suffering. As we keep expanding this caring to others, we will be increasing our loving kindness. No longer thinking solely of ourselves, we will seek happiness for all, and thereby practice compassion and not harm others. Eventually, our heart of loving kindness and compassion will encompass all other beings. Letting go transforms greed and attachment. Loving kindness transforms animosity and bitterness. Harmlessness transforms inconsideration and cruelty. Greed, ill will, and thoughtlessness arise from ignorance and our failure to understand causality. We can eliminate our ignorance with wisdom. But where do we begin? We begin with moral self-discipline, with training. On a basic level, we abstain from 1. Killing, 2. Stealing, 3. Sexual or sensual misconduct, 4. Lying, and 5. Taking intoxicants. On a broader basis, we behave in a moral and ethical way in everything we do. These 5 trainings will be covered in more detail on the section on the precepts. But I would like to touch on them briefly here, in short. By not killing, we revere all life and have compassion and respect, not just for other people, but also for animals, insects, plants, and the earth which supports us. By our very existence, we are taking lives. As we walk, we step on insects to produce the food we eat and the water we drink. Millions of other animal and microbiological lives are destroyed. We cannot stop eating or drinking water. But we can make certain we do not waste anything. Understanding our impact on others, we can use what we need, but no more than that. Not killing also has a more subtle aspect. We should not kill the seeds of goodness in others, or harm another emotionally. While our thoughts and actions can be damaging to others, it is our speech that all too easily commits this offense. Our careless, sarcastic, or angry words can deeply wound a child, a loved one, or a friend. We need to use our speech wisely and speak from the heart that wishes to help others. By not stealing, we respect the property of others. We do not take or use anything without permission of the owner. This seems simple enough. But this training also means that we do not take that book which is lying unclaimed in a restaurant. Neither do we keep the extra dollar that the clerk mistakenly gave to us. Nor do we take things from where we work for personal use. By not committing sexual or sensual misconduct, we do not indulge in sensual pleasures, understanding that to do so not only increases our attachments and craving, but our discontent as well. By not lying, we speak truthfully, understanding the power that our words can have, We choose our words wisely, realizing that great harm can result from ill-considered, untruthful speech. By not taking intoxicants, we do not take substances that affect our ability to think and behave clearly at all times, and that harm our bodies. Remaining clear-headed helps us to not harm others or ourselves. The second component of proper practice is meditative concentration. In meditative concentration, we focus our attention on whatever we are doing at the moment. Working, playing a game with our children, listening to a friend or loved one, chanting a Buddha's name. There are no distractions or worries, no doubts or drowsiness, no discriminations or attachments. We remain unaffected by our environment and maintain a calm, undisturbed mind. Initially, this state will bring joy and a sense of ease. Eventually, it will enable us to see things as they truly are. We can think of our mind as a mirror, which reflects everything perfectly. But this mirror does not judge, nor is it attached to the object that is seen reflected in it. Whatever is in the mirror is reflected clearly and purely. We try to do the same in our practice of meditative concentration. The objective is to see what appears in the mind, but to not try to hold on to what arises. When we accomplish this, we will no longer be pulled in one direction one moment and then in another direction the next. When the thought passes, we will not miss it. Our mind will return to a calm and clear state. In everyday life, we can concentrate on whatever we are doing. We will be aware of what is happening around us, but we will not be distracted or disturbed by it. In daily life, we can practice meditative concentration in everything we do, whether we are working, watering the garden, driving our car. We choose the object or activity of our attention and then remain focused on it. The more we are able to concentrate, the better our lives will become. As our awareness increases, we will make fewer mistakes. Our frustration will diminish, and we will become happier. Our objective in this kind of concentration is to reach a level where we no longer worry about what happened yesterday or fear what may happen tomorrow. We will thus feel more secure. Also, when we no longer find ourselves being swayed by whatever thoughts or feelings that happen to arise, we will remain calm. We also strive to attain meditative concentration in our Buddhist practice. Some methods require the guidance of a teacher, while others can be practiced on our own. On our own, we can concentrate on impermanence. This will enable us to understand that nothing remains the same, and that craving and ignorance keep pulling us back into unhappiness. In the practice of concentrating on no self, we will realize that everything is interrelated. There is no you, no I. There is just one. This practice will help us to reduce conflicts with others and to no longer experience loneliness and alienation. Instead, we will know the unity of all beings. The practice of concentrating on nirvana will help us to find this ultimate reality. No longer will we feel that there is more to life than we are experiencing at any moment, and that we are missing out on something more meaningful out there. The practice of concentrating on a Buddha's name will help us to become one with the perfect compassion, perfect happiness, and perfect peace that is Buddha. As we realize that we are already one with one who is perfect, we no longer feel that we are going to take the journey by ourselves. Initially, the goals of understanding ultimate reality and attaining perfection may seem far beyond our reach, but the path to reach them lies at our feet. Proceeding on it requires moral discipline, meditative concentration, and intuitive wisdom. The final component of proper practice is intuitive wisdom. Intuitive wisdom is not an intellectual pursuit, nor is it a measure of academic intelligence. It is insightful knowing and understanding, and it arises from within us when our minds are clear and calm. Initially, when we start the practice, the training of moral discipline, meditative concentration, and intuitive wisdom, our motives will be more self-centered. This is perfectly normal and a reasonable place to start from as we seek to improve ourselves with the aim of improving our lives and then of freeing ourselves from suffering. Gradually, we will begin to generate the wish to help others. While we focus on reducing our own feelings of dissatisfaction, we will make progress, which is obviously good. But we will really begin to strengthen our practice when we generate the aspiration to help all others along the path as well.